Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome, everybody. This is Monday. Can you believe it's already April 11th? What else is famous about this week? Yeah, that's right. We got tax day on Friday. Good thing. You know what? It's interesting for the industry. We're usually thinking a lot about April 15th. Got to get our taxes done. But elbow comp has been dominating our minds, dominating the news. And we're going to be talking a lot about that today. We have a number of factors that are going to be weighing into the program today, most of which is Alice Alvey, who's usually with us. It's been delayed because she got caught in some bad weather, and she is not. I don't know if you, Alice, are you on the phone? I don't think you're going to be. I don't think so. But anyway, we'll look forward to getting a report. We have Drew, though, who is our faithful producer, is here making sure the program goes off without a hitch. And, of course, we have each and every week Joe Farr, and he's going to start off giving us an update about interest rates. Joe, what's going on in the world of interest rates?
Hi, Dave. Yeah, this morning so far, rates are up a little bit. They're about an eighth higher than the first couple hours during the day, but all in all, been fairly steady. There's been no economic data to come out, no significant news, and you know, I guess maybe there's a little comfort knowing that the government didn't shut down, and maybe a little favorable reaction to the fact that they have gotten together and made some cuts at least. So, not a lot going on today.
Well, let's talk about kind of what ran on and happened last week.
Yeah, last week we had like three economic events to track last week. Been that few. And so with very little in the form of economic events, most of the attention was directed toward the minutes of the Fed meeting, which were released on Tuesday. And interesting, in those minutes, they actually did move the market down about 11:30 during the day that day. And what seemed to come out of those minutes and has been reiterated in several Fed speakers recently is that there's a growing difference of opinion among the Fed, in the Fed, as to what to do about the monetary policy. Several Fed governors are voicing more and more concern over future inflation, and so the inflation hawks are sort of getting more attention. Bernanke and several still have voiced comfort that the current policy is not going to lead to significant future inflation, but there is a growing concern that inflation is becoming a concern. Adding to that, this week there were both rate hikes in by the European Central Bank and in China as a way to slow down their inflation. So all in all, this week there was a small price reduction overall during the week, and so rates did rise some, and it stemmed mostly from this concern over future inflation.
You know what? When the Fed speak, it always has the potential of moving the market a fair amount, and so it's interesting to get and see how we and the markets hang on every word they say. Let's talk about this week, though. The Fed's going to be speaking anymore?
Well, this week more is going to be driven by actual inflation. We're going to have, you know, and what happens last month is not as important from an inflation perspective as what's going to happen in the future to mortgage investors. But what's happened last month and its trend is going to be interesting to see. On Thursday of this week, PPI will be announced, and on Friday, CPI will be announced. And both of those are going to have very large differences between the overall rate and the core rate, primarily due to the rising food and energy prices. people want to dismiss that component of it, but it is a very real impact on the price of other goods, as well as just the ability to expand the economy when inflation's growing. But the core rates, those without food and energy, are expected to show fairly tame inflation, but in a rising amount from month to month to month. So investors are looking for, you know, overall being up, but dismiss that slightly, somewhat due to food and energy being a sort of a temporary thing in their mind, and then core inflation growing at a tame rate, but nonetheless growing.
With gas prices, I think that's really in everyone's mind, especially when you look at the price of crude per barrel, where this thing could be.
Dave, I've lost you. I'll go ahead and talk about the rest of the week. Retail sales are going to come out on Wednesday. That's always a big event. Last week we had some indication that retail sales were pretty strong over the last month, and this is the more formal report. Will be interesting to see. Industrial production, also a major report, comes out on Friday. And all this is with Treasury auctions on the calendar for this month. We have the 3, 10, and 30-year Treasury auctions going on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this month. So, of this week. Yeah. So it's going to be a very big week for economic news. So I encourage everyone to pay attention and to be aware of what's going on, because any one of these could have a significant influence on mortgage rates and MBS prices.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what you are seeing out there as far as with LO Comp being now passed. And there's been so much volatility, and there's been no question there's a lot of frustration out there. And a lot of your subscribers have received a great deal of value from your service. But with the changes in LO Comp, and knowing that the LO can no longer benefit from the prices or really be affected by the shortages or, you know, gains or losses thereby, have you had any of your subscribers say they just don't need your service anymore? That's short-sighted.
Yeah. Well, Dave, obviously that's been a bit of a concern, but we've never been a float-lock service. And we've had a few LOs that would say they're just getting out of the business. But very, very few have said, you know, I'm being in it, but I no longer need your service.
It's short-sighted because, you know, we both know that the value of that service is going to go on as much as anybody. Why do you think that is that, look, as we look forward?
Well, think about it. There is still a need to know what's going on in the market. And
absolutely.
When you think about it, there's many more things that remain the same than what have changed.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's no question about that.
Yeah, think about what's the same. Still, you need to impress your customers, and you need to earn their repeat business and their referrals. You need to protect your customer from falling prices, just like you can gain a lot of benefit by helping your customer save some on improving prices.
Yeah.
By knowing what's going on in the market, maybe you're able to save a deal that you would lose otherwise. So being in the know is certainly important there. You can use the information to be a call to action. So, you know, all these are the same. You need to be able to explain to your customer why things might not be as good today as they were last week. And it's very important, always has been, but even more so now, I think it's important to create a relationship between the originator and the customer and the originator's employer company to be sort of on the same team. It's you, that group against the market, against meaning don't let it negatively impact you and let it help you.
That's a great point.
And as always, you need to have the tools that help you to set you apart from the competition.
So what has changed?
Well, you know, you cannot benefit by, an LO cannot benefit by an improving market after he's locked the loan with his customer. And when you think about overage, that's probably always been it's been an opportunity, but it's not the full amount of what you might have earned as overage. But the the other side of that's true too. You're not going to be dinged for a shortage or an underage or a mistake. And so the downside to that, though, Dave, when you think about it, is how many LOs out there, in order to get a deal or in order to make sure their customers were happy with them, took a shortage or took a small discount or took, you know, a fee and included that as a reduction of their commission. Now, unfortunately, you can't do that anymore, and I don't know if any LO wants to go to their secondary group, at least not very often, or to their wholesale supplier to say, hey, will you help me out on this deal, because they may be told no.
That's exactly right. Well, you know what? I expect in the long run, LOs who use real-time market information to benefit their customers will realize the benefits of it, the ongoing benefits, and will close more deals. It's still about having important up-to-date information. As we look at where this market is going, the information, that which you provide, Joe, is so critical. We hope that many of the listeners and many of the subscribers recognize the value of this. That part, while there have been changes, there's no question the reason they have this service is because the need to be able to tell you, communicate with consumers about what's going on, is there as much as ever. Joe, appreciate you being a part of the program here, and we look forward to continuing a long relationship, as many folks depend, I know, many of our customers depend on your service, and we appreciate you bringing that to us and being a part of the radio program each and every week. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market,
whether you're in the office or on the road.
See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to mbsquoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial.
mbsquoteline.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you back, everybody. It's the Lincoln on Lending Show, and we're talking to you about what is going on in the market. And we're talking about specifically some of the things as it relates to LO comp. And as we deal with, always seems like technology issues are one of those things we are always having to deal with to some degree out here in the radio world. When you're doing internet radio, there's a number of aspects about this that are a little bit of a challenge. So anyway, we're dealing a little bit with that again today. Joe, let's get in talking. Yeah.
Yeah, you may be going there, but before we got off LO comp, I sure wanted to hear your insights on what's been the reaction, you know, 1 week into it now, and just what are you hearing from all those people out there that are dealing with the fact that LO comp changes are a reality in place now?
Yeah, I'm going to get into that. I should remind our listeners, so many people that are part of the program each and every week expect Alice to be in this segment. Folks, she's up in the air right now, literally. She not only is regulation so many things, she is caught up in the air. She's in an airplane. She will be, it looks like her time, the wheels on the ground will be, unfortunately, just about the time of the program. She, I know, is feeling horrible about this. She would like to be here, and we're going to be talking and going over some of her segments. But, Joe, that's a great question. A lot of people are trying to figure out how to deal with LO comp now, and I want to get into a couple of thoughts and that what we're hearing. First of all, I was underwhelmed by when the stay was lifted on the new Fed rule. I was just astounded that there wasn't more reaction to that. I think what that tells me, and love your thoughts and what you're hearing from your customers, Joe, but a lot of people ended up just going, realizing this is going to happen. They resigned themselves, and they just, you know, like when you watch a boxer in a ring and he goes rope dope. I mean, he just drops. They drop their arms out of just being beat up. It feels like we've had so many things swinging at our industry, and so many are just beat up. Now, here's what I find really interesting, Joe. A number of people are starting to come out of the feeling of being beat up and are starting to look at, okay, what does this future hold? I think a lot of people made the decision, you know what, this industry has been good for me, but it's time for me to get out. And we hate to see them go. But the reality is there's a fair number of people, Joe, that are exiting and exiting the market. And, again, we hope they'll come back. I think there's still tremendous opportunity. But what's probably really encouraging is those, which we refer to as the survivors, they're the ones who are going, okay, with so many people exiting, maybe this is the time to have a contrarian view of things. Even though we know it's rough sailing ahead, maybe it's time to have a contrarian view and say, maybe this is, in fact, the time to be in the industry. So that's kind of what we're hearing a little bit. And
Art, Dave, are you hearing that come more from brokers or more from LOs of middle-sized mortgage companies or LOs at banks? Any sense there?
Well, that's what's really interesting. The commentary, let's go kind of in reverse order. What we're hearing from the banks is they're so disillusioned. Everyone who ran to the banks that thought that that was going to be the answer, they're going, if I have to spend another day here, this is just painful beyond belief. They're not designed. Good originators, I mean the best of the industry, are not designed to work inside of the typically designed to work the way they're wired. They don't work well inside of a bank. It's the structure, the things that the banks require of them. It just doesn't fit. Now, I know there's exceptions. You and I both know many good loan officers that are working successfully inside of banks. And, you know, kudos to you guys. But for many of you, that is not a good fit. And some of you that went there have come to that realization, but you're going, where do I go now? So, Joe, it's the independents that I think that have been hit and impacted by this, as well as independent loan officers, independent mortgage companies. They're all been hit by this, but some of them are starting to see opportunity.
And what are they doing to, you know, to take that step forward where they're better situated to deal with all this?
Well, we'll talk about what I'm seeing as a trend, and then I'm going to talk and give a prediction of something that I'm starting to talk about. But the first thing that I'm seeing is a good number of them are saying, okay, I'm a good originator. I never wanted to be a banker, but if I have to go be a banker to compete, so be it. I will. And they're looking at a number of mortgage banking companies, all of which seem to be a good number of them are now thinly capitalized, and kind of give everyone a review of the capitalization requirements, Joe. To be a mortgage banker, if you're a mortgage banker in the business right now, to keep your HUD approval, you have to have $1 million net worth. That's the new net worth requirement went up to. But very shortly is we're going to have, again, I believe it is in 2013, we're going to be at a $2.5 million minimum net worth requirement. So that is the bare bones minimum. And for anyone applying for a new HUD approval, they have to be at the new capital requirements of $2.5 million. What we're recommending to our clients is a focus on a net worth of $3 to $5 million. If you are in that range, that is probably where you're going to be able to not only just survive, but you are be able to do well. And by that, I mean be able to access the secondary markets as you need to. But Joe, a lot
but
of money.
But Dave, $3 to $5 million sounds like a huge amount of money.
It is.
Or, you know, and so where do you come up with that?
Here's what's amazing. Number one was we're working and we're advising one fund that's creating a $1 billion fund that is being created in the process of being created that is going to bring capital to the market. They're looking for strong originators with a good plan where they can invest capital and bring in the net worth. So now that's $1 billion sounds like a lot of money, Joe, but the reality is you start spreading that around, that's going to go quickly. So what we're finding is we do a lot of advising. Our consulting firm does a lot of advising in the area of capital, raising capital, capital creation, capital balance sheet management. And what we're finding is there is a fair amount of capital in the market. And we just published an article that I encourage everyone to go out and get. It's the MBA magazine, Mortgage Bankers Administration magazine, that was published in March. And it talks about the future of mortgage banking. And we really focus in on the capital issue, Joe. The capital issue that with the ROIs that are out there, it is a very attractive place for investment capital right now.
Well, what's the deal look like? How much do you have to give up of your company to get, you know, enough capital to reach those minimum requirements and have a little cushion?
Well, number one, we're recommending $3 to $5 million for my, like one guy said, you know, that might as well be, you know, $10 trillion. I don't know how to get that. And the reality is that is a challenge. I mean, that's a lot of money to the average person. But here's the deal. Most people do not realize how much money is sitting in money markets and liquid investments because they've come out of investments, concern about where to invest. I would recommend anyone looking to obtain capital, get a hold of that article we wrote. I'm not trying to promote an article other than it has some great information about ROI and how to structure the capital that you can bring in. And that's a document you can share with a prospective investor. So to your question, how much to give up? The way we structure it, the way we recommend, we don't want any of the people receiving capital to give up control of their company. We always try to have you maintain, our clients maintain control of their company. And you go, well, I've got, you know, 100,000, whatever they have, 200,000, 250,000, 300,000, 500,000, whatever they have right now, granted, it's way below the minimums. But here's the key, Joe. If you have sufficient capital to be able to run the day-to-day operations from your own cash, and the cash that is needed is only leverage capital, that capital which you need to be able to meet qualifications, then that situation, now it's all paid in capital, it's all at risk, but when you're not needing it to run day-to-day operations, Joe, it's considered leverage capital to the investors, and you're in a much stronger position. So the key is consider what your capital needs are, what you'd like it to be, get a hold of someone who can advise you on what your business model is, you should be at as far as the amount of cash in the bank, and then go after it. And hopefully you're able to operate with your own cash. If you are, you're in a much stronger position to maintain control of your business.
Well, there's certainly room there'll be plenty of room for survivors.
There's no question that with the – here's an interesting prediction I've been making, and now I'm starting to get data points all over the state. We're talking to a number of the state regulators. There is a significant drop in loan volumes across the country, no question. Everyone, it's well documented. Volumes are way, way off from what, you know, they have been at historical highs, certainly, but even recently last year. But here's something that is not being tracked, Joe, and it's really important our listeners grab a hold of this data point. The rate at which people are exiting the industry, which is capacity, the ability for people to take loan applications, is dropping faster than loan volumes. In other words, more people are leaving the industry than the volume is dropping. What that's creating, if this trend continues, and by all indications, the exodus, which somewhat feels like a mass exodus, Joe, is resulting in consumers going, where's my loan officer? So they're looking for – I mean, people still move. People still need to refinance. The financing programs, granted, different world out there when it comes to the programs, Joe.
And Dave, as long as the QRM rules aren't too strict, they'll have loans to finance them too.
And exactly. And I think we're going to get into QRM after we take a quick break here. But I think the reality is I think this is probably one of the best times if you can endure the challenges going on. I was just talking to one of the leaders in our industry before the radio program, and he said, Dave, I got to tell you, I mean, I'm spending so much time just trying to figure out what regulation is coming. And folks, as Alice is bringing to us, and Joe and I are going to cover here in just a minute, the reality is there's more coming, which means the battle is not over. And the tide seems to have turned significantly against us. But those of us who will stay the course and be willing to set in the systems, you have the potential of having one of the most amazing careers. And yeah, but Dave, aren't they regulating compensation? Yeah, but well, here's another thing. This is another trend that I'm seeing. And we're going to take a break right after this. Number one, the trend we're seeing is this. We're seeing that an increasing number of loan officers are starting to negotiate with consumers. Remember this. A lot, there's confusion on this. If you're being paid a salary, some people are saying, I can't receive any compensation from a consumer. If you're earning a salary, that's not related to the new Reg Z rule change, nor is it related to Dodd-Frank. That's a Department of Labor issue. You receiving that salary is a Department of Labor issue. So it's a side and not a part of LO Comp regulations. You, if you're receiving a salary, can, as long as you don't receive any other compensation from the company other than your salary, you can go out and negotiate with a consumer to provide services directly to them and be compensated directly by them. Now, here's the deal. If, in fact, we see that we're going to have the capacity issue that I see setting up, that is what's setting up here right now, I believe mortgage originators, brokers specifically, good top loan officers are going to be in such high demand that consumers, especially in the jumbo market where people want to get something done fast, are going to be willing to hire and pay directly to loan officers compensation, and I believe that you are going to be in a unique advantage. Again, this is something that's developing. It's going to be driven by capacity, Joe, so we'll have to be that remains to be seen, but I am seeing a very definite, distinct possibility that we're going to find loan originators going to go out and be able to negotiate with consumers. In fact, consumers are going to be seeking for top LOs, provide services. And, Joe, you were saying before the program, isn't that what we are all about originally? Isn't that what a loan officer is really designed to do?
Well, and the transaction certainly not becoming any easier. So, people are going to really need the expertise that comes with somebody that can navigate through all the various disclosures and the nuances of underwriting guidelines and the QRM requirements and find the best deal.
Without question, I tell you, this is the thing. This is not game over. I always love those movies where it looks like the bad guy's winning, they're taking over and running, and I love those twists and turns. Folks, for you that are listening, that are working as a loan originator right now, do not lose heart. Yes, there has been some disheartening things going on, but do not lose heart. I think we're seeing a scenario begin to develop that could be very, very exciting. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success,
Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back, everybody. This is David Licken with Licken on Lending. We appreciate you being with us. Again, this is Monday, April 11th. I just cannot, Joe, get over the fact that it's April 11th. Folks, we've got a program today that's a little bit different than we normally have because the Profit Doctor is speaking at a conference, at an education conference up in Dallas for the Texas Mortgage Bankers Association. Alice is up in the air, literally, in a flight, and I could just imagine, Joe, how she's feeling right now because she was liking to get into this discussion. We've got her notes in front of us, and we're going to be able
to
cover
a lot about.
There is, but let's start off. You brought up in the last segment, by the way, I am amazed at the amount of text messages I received and emails after that segment. A lot of people are encouraged, Joe, by the fact that they're, tell me something positive, like one person said, got to hear it. So we may have to go back to that part. Yeah, well, let's get into risk retention. I think you bring up a really, really good point. And you sent me some notes this week. I think the risk retention is another one of those factors that are going to factor into the future. Let's get into that discussion.
Okay, well, you know, the 2 weeks ago, the banks and the joint regulators put out their guidelines, if you will, and they're not in stone yet. They're up for comment, but the guidelines wind up being a very narrowly defined set of criteria that would allow a loan to meet the qualified residential mortgage definition, which means it's exempt from risk retention. Very, very narrowly defined. Very, you know, 20% down payment if it's a purchase, 25% maximum LTV if it's a refi, 28-36 front and back ratios. Never, you cannot have been delinquent more than 60 days in the last 2 years. A lot of things that I read one thing that said something like 20% of the agency's current production, Fannie and Freddie's current production, would meet the definition. So it's a very restrictive definition. Now, what they did, though, at the same time they created a very strict definition of the loans, they exempted all government-guaranteed loans, and they included Fannie and Freddie in that exemption as long as they're in conservatorship. So that opens everything back up, right? I mean, it says FHA loans are okay. Fannie and Freddie loans are no need for risk retention on those. We're going to get to the legislative update pretty soon where the House Financial Services Committee has proposed, has passed a bill through committee that would retract the exemption for Fannie and Freddie loans, meaning that only FHA loans by definition and those that meet the underwriting guidelines would be qualified residential mortgages, which would be a huge issue. Let's talk about just the risk retention requirements. And think of them this way. It only applies to loans that are going to be sold into or put into a mortgage-backed security. The loans are collateral for an asset-backed security or mortgage-backed security. And so, you know, if a bank's making a loan, they're going to keep it on their portfolio. They have their own risk retention requirements or equity retention requirements. But if it's going to be sold into a mortgage-backed security, these retention requirements apply. And it is to retain 5% of the security, the risk on the security or the security itself. Or, and I'll get into one interesting option, but and those, that risk can be shared among the issuer, the originator, the aggregator, depending on who's in the chain. It's not real clear as to how that's to be or how it would be shared, and my guess is due to complexities, most of the risk is going to be retained at the issuer level. But there could be arrangements where the originators negotiated, they get a little better price maybe to retain some of the risk on the loans. Also, they say that you cannot hedge that risk, all right? Credit default swaps, you know, are not in favor these days, and so they're essentially saying you cannot hedge it. And you cannot structure it such that you get.
That was curious to me. I know there's the credit swaps and the received so much negative press, but that one was really curious to me. I'd love to get some insights into the background of that. One thing I wanted, you made an earlier comment, Joe, that about sharing the risk, the 5% retention. This goes to the capital requirements because if for those companies that are better capitalized, that are able to share some of that risk, the advantage does go to them. And so a lot of, again, for those of us who are in the industry frustrated by all that's going on, say, yes, but Dave, doesn't that give a decided advantage to those with the biggest balance sheets?
Sure seems to.
It does. I mean, it's hard to look at it any other way. But I'll tell you this, that, again, you have to go back to this. Do big banks, do the large institutions meet the needs of the consumers? The answer, Joe, you and I both know. The answer is typically they do not know how to service the needs of the consumer, way a trained professional loan officer does.
Absolutely. When you think about the brokerage world, they have survived because they are close to the consumer and they provide a service the customer wants to receive.
like that one guy says in that one movie, what's the one line? I wish I could think of the movie title. He says, the stories of my death are greatly exaggerated. I think we've watched the mortgage broker and the originator survive through so many attacks. And yes, this one is a severe blow, but I got to come back and tell you, provide good service, focus on those things. And I'm getting a lot of feedback, Joe, from that earlier segment we did. So let's keep on going. Let's talk about some of the other things here. So about risk retention.
All right. So you, some people were thinking about the subprime securities and all the tranches that were put together. You had AAA rated pieces, you had lower rated pieces, and you could sell those for premiums. And this risk retention requirement prohibits you from benefiting from selling your securities, structuring your securities such that you get cash up front. If you get cash up front now, you're going to have to put it in the security to serve as a loss absorber.
Yeah, loss absorber. Yeah.
And then there are going to have to be additional disclosure requirements on the securities that maybe far beyond what anyone's even imagined, because somehow you're going to have to document that you have this risk, you've shared this risk, and you're in compliance with ongoing risk retention. So real quickly, let's go over. There are several forms of risk retention.
Yes.
One form, and this is kind of bizarre to me, but one form is that you can take 95% of a population of similar loans and sell those for 100% risk as long as you keep the other 5%. And just as an example, let's say you make $500 million worth of similar loans. Now, how you define similar loans, I don't know. But you make $500 million of similar loans, you can keep on your books $25 million of whole loans, and you can securitize the full $475 million that's left. Now, think about that. Think about if the $25 million pool doesn't perform like the $475 million pool, are there going to be lawyers coming back at you saying, you know, how'd you select the $25 million you kept, and how'd you select the $475 million you didn't?
Great point.
Sounds very, very subjective to me. And then there are what's called horizontal and vertical retention, risk retention. The horizontal would be that you would just retain, you would absorb the first 5% in losses. So you'd have a 5% loss piece, which seems kind of punitive, given that
it is.
There might only be 6% loss on the total deal, so you've absorbed 100% of loss. There's also a vertical way where you would own, you know, if there are multiple tranches in the security, you'd have to own as an asset. You'd own 5% of each of those tranches. They talk about a combination of the two, where you would own a 5% interest in the tranches, but you'd also have to retain at least half the risk retention in a first loss piece. And then there's the option to essentially treat it like the old participation agreements. You've been in the business long enough, Dave, to remember those participation agreements.
Remember those
well. Where, in essence, you just continue to own a 5% interest in each of the loans that you put into the security. So all these are going to add complications to things, especially if you start sharing in it between various entities. And all these are still up for comment, and I encourage anyone who's got an interest in this, which is most of you out there, to participate in that comment period, because if you're going to have to hold the 5%, it's going to cost more. It's going to cost the consumer more. We know that the government has been absorbing, subsidizing, if you will, that risk, but it's important to find a way to get there without devastating the market.
The reality is that the looks like the advantage keeps going to those that are the well capitalized that can afford to carry that risk. But what do they not do well? I keep coming back to that. What do large institutions not do well?
And the vast majority of our listeners fill in that void and need you.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about what's happening at the legislative level, because there are a number of things that have, you know, it's as though there's a struggle going on between Congress and the regulators. To me, I see Congress passing these the Financial Services Committee has passed eight bills that we'll talk about here, but it's almost like micromanaging the Fannie and Freddie.
It really is.
And it's as though they're saying to the regulators, you're not doing it quick enough, we're going to make you do it quicker. And if they do it too quick, it can, as I said just a minute ago, it could devastate the industry.
Well, we're going to get into that as soon as we come back from this break. Folks, we'll be right back.
PMI Mortgage Insurance Company is the clear choice for your higher LTV conventional borrowers. Unlike FHA, PMI offers a choice of flexible premium plans to fit the individual needs of each borrower. From a one-time upfront cost with no renewal premium to a monthly plan with no upfront charges, PMI's premium plans recognize larger down payment and good credit history, saving your clients what can at times be thousands of dollars. PMI also provides lenders with fast electronic submission tools to increase efficiencies. Mortgage insurance is more relevant than ever, so it's important to utilize a mortgage insurer who's committed to the business for the long term. It is vital that you work with a company whose core competency is credit risk management and bring that wealth of knowledge to your firm. At PMI, mortgage insurance is their only business, so they have to get it right. PMI's mission is to create sustainable homeownership opportunities. To learn more about how PMI solutions can assist your business, please contact your PMI representative today or call 800-966-4PMI, 800-966-4PMI.
Good to have you back. This is Dave Licken with Licken on Lending, and there has been an Alice Alvey sighting. We're hearing rumors that just maybe she may be able to join in, Joe, on the part of this discussion.
Okay.
So she just called our producer, so hopefully we'll look for her on the program, if at all possible. I know this. You folks, a lot of people don't realize, but Alice is one of those people, the show must go on. Alice broke her foot just before one of our broadcasts. I think this is 3 weeks ago now. She didn't tell any of us. She's sitting there at ice in intense pain, and she's sitting there and is on the radio talking, as you know, running through this report. And we hope she'll be able to dial in and run through this, because there's so much. But her passion to make sure you folks, you the listeners, are updated on all this, I just can't tell you. This is a labor of love. But let's get into it, and hopefully we'll hear her voice here in just a few minutes. But you were bringing up with the Republican, the struggle that's going on between within the government, within the various houses right now, the branches of government, and there seems to be an underlying tone. There is an absolute resolve to get rid of Fannie and Freddie. And the story this last week that really dominated the news, and I'm getting a lot of people say, Dave, what about the news about the compensation? Isn't that one more nail? I think there's just one nail after another going into the coffin of Fannie and Freddie. So let's get into talking about the GSE credit risk. I bring that up, Joe, because I wonder how much of that is playing into this thing. Let's get rid of these guys. Let's drive them out. That's short-sighted, I believe. People, we were talking to someone over you know, you've been in the industry a long time. I started in 1973. It's been 37 years of this. And Fannie and Freddie existed since 1938. It's existed profitably. That's been hugely impacting on the market to provide liquidity. We don't want these guys to go away. A lot of people, and I'm a free markets guy, and you see those who watch me on television, Fox, you'll hear me with various commentators talk about the fact that we want the government out. We want the government out. That does not to be interpreted. We necessarily want to get rid of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So anyway, let's get into this. That's a little bit of a backdrop, Joe, but the point of it is Fannie and Freddie have been around for years. Freddie since the 70s, early 70s, and they've been around, and they've been profitable, providing liquidity. So let's get into some of these. I think there's a story behind this story, but let's get through what the Financial Services Committee got out. Let's cover the first one, H.R. 1223.
Yeah, this is, as we mentioned, under the regulator's definition of QRM, Fannie and Freddie loans are going to qualify as not having to have risk retention on it. Well, this bill makes it law that cannot be true, that
just by the fact that Fannie and Freddie are the buyer of the loan does not make it a QRM. So it's as I mentioned last week, I feel like the government's in an ideal situation where they have have defined what is QRM, what's not QRM, and then they also control Fannie and Freddie in what they will and they can and cannot make from an underwriting perspective. So, they could tweak underwriting rules a little bit over a long period of time to get to the point where the private sector is able to or is competitive with the government sector, but they don't need legislation to do it. They have all the power they need, other than, as I mentioned, to start this, maybe there's a power struggle going on here. But yeah, this so that act would say Fannie and Freddie loans, by definition, are just because they're Fannie and Freddie loans, will not exempt them from the risk retention requirements.
That could be significant.
Oh, it'd be huge.
If
that were today, if that were to take place any time, too soon.
Well, let's talk about H.R. 1221, the Equity and Government Compensation Act.
Well, when I talk about micromanaging, this is the House Financial Services Committee saying you guys are paying the executives of Fannie and Freddie too much money, and in fact, we want to implement the general schedule pay scale for government employees to Fannie and Freddie. Now, they're not doing that to pay them more, right? So
exactly.
What are we going to see happen to those great minds and dedicated people that have been at Fannie, especially those that have been at Fannie and Freddie throughout all this? That might not be the wisest thing in the world to do.
Well, then I'm trying to get through these within the time. Hopefully we'll see Alice join in just to hear her voice. But let's get into H.R. 1224, the Portfolio Risk Reduction Act.
This is Congress now, again, micromanaging, mm-hmm. saying you've got to reduce the size of your asset, your balance sheet. You've got to reduce your assets to Fannie and Freddie, and then give them each numbers absolutes by which they have to have reduced their holdings, and they do it over a number of years. So it's just a year-by-year reduction saying this is where you will be.
Let's get into H.R. 1222, the GSE Subsidy Elimination Act. Now, that's got the word elimination in, so.
Yeah. Well, that's where the Congress is directing that FHFA gradually increase the guarantee fees for Fannie and Freddie.
Yep.
Which they're doing anyway. I don't really understand the need for this, but they're saying you do it at your discretion, but make sure you don't disrupt the housing recovery as you do it. Well, that's kind of what they're doing already.
Let's look at, by the way, Alice is in the airport, and it's so noisy there. She says you'd hear me, but you'd hear about all the other people around us. So our Drew, our producer, says she's going to bow. She greets everybody. She wishes she could be here and run through these things. Let's cover the next H.R. 1226, the GSE Mission Improvement Act. That is almost if we can't eliminate it, let's try to improve it. So.
Well, what they're doing is they're basically admitting that there was a problem in the prior mission of the agencies, which was they were forced to meet certain affordable housing goals, and this is to eliminate those affordable housing goals.
Yeah, we could is sponsored by Representative Ed Royce, and it's interesting to see the agendas behind this. Let's go into, for the sake of time, let's get to H.R. 31, the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac Accountability and Transparency for Taxpayers Act.
Yeah.
Transparency, I love it.
This is just to make the information that they report more available. It expands what's there. So, that's kind of
significant. Yeah, and I think it's kind of like a knee-jerk reaction to what you saw about the salaries when Fannie and Freddie. It's interesting, by the way, when they reported the salaries of the top executives, they were making just ridiculous amounts of money, and it is absurd, for what they've been through to have executives making that. But it's also interesting that they turned a profit here just recently, so that may be a relative in accounting terms. So let's get into
which is
the whole thing
that,
about accountability. I think was driving a lot of H.R. 31. People are going,
I'm not going to buy these numbers. I'm not going to buy anything Fannie and Freddie selling us right now as far as way of what they're reporting from an earnings standpoint. Let's get at HR 1227, 1227, the GSE Risk and Activities Elimination or Limitation Act. Not Limitation Act.
But limitation, yeah. This is Congress saying that to Fannie and Freddie, no new business. All right, but
yep.
FHFA has already done that, so this is, again, not significant new stuff, but it's Congress getting involved in the Fannie management, Fannie and Freddie management, and there has been an amendment to this to make certain that it's okay for new products. New business is hard to define. It could be very strictly construed, or it could be very broadly construed. But at least they have added an amendment to say that new products are okay.
Let's talk about the last thing before we go to a break, and that is HR 1225 GSE Debt Insurance Issuance Approval Act.
Now, the Congress wants Treasury Department to approve any new debt issuance by the agencies, and they issue debt to either roll over old debt or to raise new debt. Probably not doing a lot of that, but this act would say that if the Treasury approves it, they've then got to report to Congress within and FHFA within 7 days to tell them why. And again, a little micromanagement there.
And it's micromanagement. Again, the agenda behind what's behind all this is a lot of really focusing in on, and we're coming into a political season. Is it any surprise, folks, that we're just having a lot of legislation coming out to say what they did to fix this, the Fannie and Freddie problem, quote-unquote Fannie and Freddie problem? Well, Alice is going to get into this a great deal. Again, she feels badly that she's not on the program today, but she cannot control the airlines. As hard as she tries, she cannot do that. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs.
And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lincoln on Lending Show.
All right, welcome back. This is the Lincoln on Lending Show, and you're talking to Dave Lincoln, Joe Farr. Alice Halby is in an airport. She's on the ground, safe and sound. We also have Andy Schell teaching, so it's a little bit more of a relaxed program. I just got some nice feedback on over the break from our producer. He says, you know what, it's just a nice, relaxed style. Good program today. It's always nice when you have a guy that has done this professionally to give us that feedback, Joe, especially when it's just the two of us. There's normally four of us out there. But we also have back on the program, we have Tony Garitano. So I want to get into talking. Tony, welcome to the program again.
Thank you, Dave.
Good. Make sure we have your mic turned on. Tony, we talked last week. You were at the recent technology conference, and we began to talk about some of the things that you saw happening. We've got about a good 5 minutes today to get into a little bit of a discussion about this. Give me some more information, if you could, what you see as a trend lines. I received a number of emails about consolidation. We talked about consolidation is something I predicted 2 years ago is going to start happening as the market contracts. Consolidation, again, it's all about capitalization. The strong survive, those that have the capital, and especially this is true when it comes to technology. But is it just capital, the single thing that's driving the single biggest factor that's driving the consolidation, Tony?
Well, I can tell you, I think that the vendors at the show were absolutely giddy about the mortgage bot acquisition.
Oh, really?
They were excited. There was a lot of good energy. I think that what we've seen is, you know, because of the capital issues, because of the consolidation that has hurt vendors, to your point, I also expected a lot more consolidation. That didn't happen. But I think that this MortgageBot acquisition was a real, or could be a real, turning point, because it wasn't a distressed sale. They got over $230 million, and vendors were excited about that. They're like, shoot, if MortgageBot can get that, so can I.
Well, that's good.
That was exciting for them. And I should preface that everything that I tell you throughout this interview is predominantly from the vendor perspective. Not very many lenders there.
Yeah, you had mentioned that last week. It was underattended from a lender standpoint.
From a lender's perspective.
Yeah, but the reality is vendors, I mean, such an integral part. Especially if you look at all the legislation out there. And I want to just interject a quick comment again. I have received more feedback on that earlier segment where we're talking about the future of loan officers, why they shouldn't quit. Thank you so much. Email me more feedback. I'll go down that into greater depth, some of the, what I believe is going to be driving the success of loan officers. And that gets me to LOSs. Let's talk, Tony, if you would, just basically the landscape of LOSs. Is there anything significant coming down the line? Calix has been such a Calix Point has been such a dominant player for so many years. We watched Ellie Mae come into the market. We watched recently acquisition of PC Lender. What's your take on the LOSs? What can we see transpiring over the next 24 months?
Well, there's a battle for the mid-tier lender going on, especially in the LOS market. In addition, at the show, we saw Mortgage Cadence release a new LOS called Symphony, which is geared to compete with the Ellie Mae's of the world and to go more down to the mid-tier lender. We also saw ISGN announced that they're going to be releasing their new LOS, which is a combination of Dynatech and London Bridge.
Right.
So I think that what you're going to see, Dave, is these bigger companies picking up LOSs or building LOSs to try and go after that mid-tier lender because, you know, let's face it, there are only so many big lenders left and they have technology or they're going to build it. So these LOSs, I really think they're going to go hot and heavy after each other this year. As to if they're going to release anything actually new, you know, that remains to be seen. I didn't see anything particularly earth-shattering in terms of what differentiates one LOS from another. I'm sure they would disagree with me.
Some would take exception with that, yes.
But I think the competition is definitely going to heat up among the LOS space this year.
What about, we've got some new entrants into the market. Motivity is one of them. We've also, a couple of years ago, we saw LoanSifter come in. And we're seeing, there's some new products coming out. I mean, we both share some enthusiasm. I know Bruce Backer over there at LoanSifter excited about what they're bringing to the market. Motivity, I'm very excited about what they're doing. They've got some that dashboard is such a need, especially in this market, the dashboard that Motivity adds. Any comments about what you see as far as new vendors coming into the market?
Well, at the show, I would say it was a lot of mainstay vendors, but that was probably just because it was a very small show. There were some new products, per se, that that I talked to you a little bit about earlier. These new vendors that did enter the space probably did so, you know, year, two, 3 years ago, like the Motivities, like the LoanSifters, and they had some really great technology that spoke to a real market need, and they're doing very well. Motivity has a great product, and so does LoanSifter.
Well, we're Blinken. It's gone. It's over, Tony. We got to go to the exit. We thank you so much, listeners, for being a part of the program again today. Next week, we're going to be focusing really deep into the call report, something you cannot ignore. Good to have you with us this week. Appreciate you understanding. Without us having Alice, we wish everybody a great week. And without Andy, of course, Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor. They'll all be back next week talking about LOComp. Excuse me. We'll go on with LOComp, but really diving deep into the call report. Have a great week, everybody.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week and thank you for listening.